सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्ति। So last week we were seeing the introduction for Upanishads. The word Upanishad, when you split it, it will be Upanishad. Upa means near, ni means below, shad means sit. So near, below, sit literature you can say. You got to sit near the Guru to get the knowledge of the self, which is the nearest, which is you yourself. So near indicates the proximity to the Guru. Sitting closer to the Guru, you learn the scripture from the Guru. He talks from his personal knowledge, personal experience. And you listen to him or her with devotion. Below indicates devotion. And also shat means sit, which means to have a mind which is completely introverted. Before coming to Upanishads, you should have said bye-bye to the world. That's what it means. Bye-bye to the world, like we studied in Bhajagovindam before. Bye-bye means mentally bye-bye. You remember the statement that I quoted when we were doing Bhajagovindam with Swami Chinnanandaji said. He says, before the world kicks you, you kick the world. The world keeps coming up with all kinds of different, challenges, and it keeps kicking us. Now coronavirus, you solve this, something else will come. Then you solve that, something else will come. So the world keeps on kicking us. It is just that we don't inquire the essential nature of the world and its challenges, the essential world of our true nature, essential nature of our true nature, we don't inquire. So as a result, what happens is, we keep getting kicked by these challenges of the world. But one who pauses and ponders, he is able to understand that the essential nature of the world is that divinity, the essential nature of the individual is also divinity. He realizes that oneness, that absolute oneness at the experience level he might have not got, but at least the worldly experiences and its relative passing nature is understood by that person. So he knows he has the value, he knows the value of the world, but he has no value for the world. That's the state of renunciation. And that is very essential when you want to study the Upanishad. So that is what the term sit indicates. Sit means the mind is not running around, not bothered about what is happening in the world. Just simply sits quietly and focuses on this knowledge. So that is why traditionally, even when Swamiji used to give Bhagavad Gita lectures every year in Delhi, Chennai and all these cities across the world, evenings he will give Bhagavad Gita class, which is open for anybody and everybody. Even Upanishad class, which he does in the morning, is also for everyone and anyone. But morning, automatically when you have the class, Upanishad class from 7 to 8 in the morning, you will see automatically the crowd is very, very less. Evening, it will be overflowing. You know, if you come to Kamani Auditorium, it will be full. But if you come in the morning for Upanishad class, when you used to do it, hardly first two rows is full. That too initially used to come in Jan-Feb. It's extremely cold. And in that cold weather, Upanishad class, leave it, that sort of a thing. Evening, lot more people come. It's more cryptic. It is for subtle extremely qualified students, Upanishad. So Upa Ishad, near below sit. Sitting closer to the Guru with only interest in merging the individual with indivisible truth. And with sheer devotion, looking up to Guru and listening to his words, observing his actions, with absolute introverted mind. Then the information that you get from the Guru will bring about the transformation. That is why Jesus Christ also says, empty thyself, I shall fill thee. So empty thyself, I shall fill thee. So the whole idea is to become empty. Spirituality is about becoming empty. When the mind becomes empty, when you become empty of thoughts, then the self manifests itself. Self-realization is not an accomplishment. It is not an achievement. It is not gaining something that you are not. It is realizing your real nature. It is owning up your true nature. So the true nature surfaces and manifests when the thoughts are completely eradicated and the mind is purified and becomes still, like when the water is cleansed and becomes still, the sun's reflection becomes very clear. So the Guru will give the knowledge, but the Shishya will have to do a lot of sadhana and qualify. And when the Shishya is preparing through the sadhanas and listening to the Guru, the words bring about the transformation. Otherwise, the words will not bring about the transformation. So that's why we also in our classes, to a new group, we don't straight away start Upanishad. Even if they say, yaar, come to all the other classes. You survive with us for 10, 12 years, then we'll see. You know, because you need to have that kind of interest if you want to learn the Upanishad. What is said in the 18 chapters of the Bhagavad Gita is said in few mantras in the Upanishads. In the Keno Upanishad, the first chapter I think has 9 verses. Second chapter 5 and the third and fourth, I don't remember the exact verses, but it's given in a story form. So totally put together, it won't be more than 30-35 verses. Now if you go to Isavasya Upanishad, it has only 18 mantras. So what the Isavasya Upanishad gives you in 18 mantras is what is elaborated in the Bhagavad Gita in the 18 chapters. So you've got to be extremely prepared for you to gain the knowledge of the Upanishad. So Upanishad means near below sit. Also Upanishad means it is gaining the knowledge of Brahman. It's called Brahma Vidya. Another meaning for the word Upanishad is Brahma Vidya. Upanishads, you can directly say it is Moksha Shastra. Whereas Bhagavad Gita can be said as both Moksha Shastra as well as Dharma Shastra. Bhagavad Gita also talks about the worldly Dharma, Karma Yoga. It gives you all other values. It prepares you. And then it takes you to Jnana, which is in the, 13, 14, 15 chapters. It gives you the qualification, the qualities of a jnani, all that it gives there. So Bhagavad Gita is both Dharma Shastra and Moksha Shastra. It also talks about moksha, but it also comes down to our level and talks about dharma. Whereas in the Upanishad, it is for people who have finished all the dharmas of the Brahmacharya and Grahastha Ashrama. So go into Vanaprastha and Sannyas. So Vanaprastha and Sannyas. Mentally, some level of detachment should be there. That mumukshatvam should be there. The fourfold qualification that is talked about for a Shishya in the Shastra is Viveka, Vairagya, Shatsampati, and Mumukshatva. Viveka means Nitya Anitya Viveka Vichara. Clearly discriminating between what is permanent and what is impermanent. And identifying with permanent aspects of life. That is called Viveka. Viveka is clear discrimination between what is real, eternal and ephemeral. And identifying with eternal, negating the ephemeral. That is called Viveka. And with as a result of that Viveka, you will have Vairagya with reference to the world. Vairagya or Viragi is not that you don't contact the world or you don't contact what you like. Raga, Vairagya, Viraga means rising above raga means the opposite of raga is hatred. Raga means like. The opposite of it is hatred. So you basically rise above likes and dislikes. Raga dvesha. So viragi means not the one who runs away from likes. Viragi means one who has risen away from the likes, above the likes. So the worldly stuff, you become detached. You understood that iron and gold is good for buying iron and gold. That is Vairagya. So Viveka should be there. Relatively speaking, Vairagya should be there. In other words, you have basically weighed anything that can be achieved at the body level, mind level, intellect level. And you project and see what can be achieved in future or what somebody else has achieved, which could be 10 times or 20 times more than you. And with all that you clearly understand, it is still coming under the category of transitory, passing, fleeting category. So then you rise above it and you seek the self with absolute resolve and terribly burning desire. Terrific burning desire, which is called Mumukshatva. Mumukshatva means ardent desire to liberate. The happiness that I am looking for, I cannot get it from the worldly. I want to go within and realize the self. The burning desire to liberate is called Mumukshatva. These are the three qualities called Viveka, Vairagya and Mumukshatva. There is one more he talks about as Shatsampati, where he gives sixfold qualifications, which starts with Dhamma, which is sense control, then Shama, mind control. Shama, Dhamma. Or Dhamma Shama. Dhamma is sense control. Shama is mind control. Then Uparama. Uparama is mind staying with yourself, not going out. Adi Shankara defines Uparama as Swadharma Anushtana. Means doing what you are supposed to do. Unnecessarily our mind will say, what is the background Madhushri ji is having? What is the background Mamtaji is having? Can I have the same background when I am doing the class? The mind keeps going into all these backgrounds. What is being taught, the focus shifts into the backgrounds. So, the mind keeps going away from me. Got to bring it within me. Upa Rama. Rama means reveling. Ramante means reveling. Reveling within. A mind which revels within. So the most important quality of a student who is interested in gaining the knowledge of Vedanta or Upanishad. See, Upanishad, when we say it is the Antbhaga Vedas, the end portion of the Vedas contain the philosophy of life and living. So that philosophical portion is called Antbhaga Vedas or Vedanta, which is Upanishad. The beginning bhag of the Vedas are mantra, brahmana and aranyaka, which are ritualistic portion, which prepares the person, which is more suitable and needed for a person who is in grihastha ashrama and brahmacharya and grihastha. Having gone through all that, a person comes to Upanishads, Vedanta. So, when you are turning towards the scripture, your mind should be introverted, should not be running around. So, Uparama, being satisfied in what you have. If you are not satisfied with what you have, it doesn't matter, really speaking. It could be 100, 1000, 10,000, 10 million, 10 trillion, 10, whatever. It doesn't matter. You learn to be satisfied with what you have. Be within yourself. And Swadharma Anushtanam Uparama. Then Titiksha. Putting up with inconvenience cheerfully. Or endurance. This is very important. The mind should not be affected by what is happening around. It should be fully available to focus on the knowledge. That is Titiksha. Putting up with inconvenience cheerfully. Not somehow putting up. Because I have no choice. Consciously I am putting up, I understand. Body will have, I think all of you are in Delhi, I am in Chennai. So you are all, feeling the cold there. So you will have to wear certain clothes. To put up with inconvenience cheerfully. After some time, summer will come. You put up with that also in cheerfully. Electricity may go, AC will go away, heater will go away. Put up with it. The mind is able to deal with it because it is very well established in the higher. That's called titiksha. That titiksha is very important quality also. Then the next one is shraddha. Shraddha, Adi Shankara defines shraddha as faith in the words of the guru and shastra. The shastra declares many things, and that which our intellect can reflect and understand and conceive and experience, that is also given by the guru. But finally, the guru also talks about Brahman, which is beyond the intellect. You cannot grasp it with your intellect. It is beyond the purview of the intellect. So you need Shraddha, faith. Shraddha is loosely translated as faith. Actually the starting point is faith. It is faith plus conviction plus consistency. With the Shraddha which the Guru instills in you, in the Mundaka Upanishad, he talks about the Guru as one who is Shrotriyam and Brahmanishtam. Shrotriyam and Brahmanishtam means one who is well versed in the words of the Vedas, learned, one who has learned all the Vedas, and also one who lives according to what the Vedas talk about, one who is self-realized. That sums up the Guru. Shrotriyam and Brahmanishtam. And that Guru not only teaches you through the scriptures, but the Guru's life itself teaches us a lot of things. So that is why in some other context they say you got to reside with the Guru, serve the Guru and learn from the Guru. Not because Guru is in need of your service. Guru doesn't need your service. If any Guru needs your service, he is not a true Guru. He or she. By being around the Guru, we learn. You're going to study that in this Upanishad. About the words and beyond and all that the Upanishad is going to talk about in Keno Upanishad. So, the Guru is trying to communicate what cannot be articulated in words. So, he also or she also communicates it in silence. So, when you are in absolute silence, when we say that, we don't mean not talking. When your thoughts are also quiet, then the communication that the guru is doing in silence is received by the disciple. Now, if the heater is on in your room, and let's say the heater is making some sound, you may not hear that sound now because you are focusing on what I am saying. I believe so. So confidently I am saying that. So the moment I keep quiet, you immediately hear the noise coming out of the heater. So when the mind quietens, what the guru communicates in silence is received. So that's why they say you got to be always in the presence of the guru. Because the self, which is the subject matter in the Upanishad, is not possible to be communicated by words. So, Shraddha means you start with faith in the words of the guru, which you develop with your intellect. You have heard many things from the guru and you have, you know, reflected and absorbed it, verified it. And also the way he conducts or she conducts gives you that assurance. So with that Shraddha, you develop the conviction. Say that even this, what he says, that you are Atma, Brahman and all that, you develop conviction that with that corroboratory evidence. And then you fully become ready to plunge into that unknown, that uncharted territory. It's a completely different, you know, thing. Now people go for expeditions and this and that. Even though you prepare, you get ready and go trekking, you keep going to different mountains, you don't go to the same mountains. You prepare, go to some place here and there, prepare and then go to the mountain which you want to climb. And even though you are ready, prepared with all the gadgets and everything, suddenly a new challenge will come. You got to be ready. And one small slip, you may die. You may finish. You are finished. So, you should be ready for it. Otherwise, you can't get into any expedition. It's not possible. That kind of Shraddha, to plunge into the uncharted territory, you know, you got to go into that. That is Shraddha. So faith plus conviction plus consistency, till you bring about the transformation, realize the self, you don't give up. That Shraddha is needed. Bhagavad Gita says, Shraddhavan labhate jnanam. Only a person with Shraddha gains the jnanam. Others only gain the information. And there is an ocean of difference between information and knowledge. If you have information, you have accumulated. If you have knowledge, you have dropped everything. Spiritual evolution is dissolving, not accumulating. In the world, what people call as success, it is measured in terms of their acquisitions, isn't it? So, wealth that is acquired, people that is acquired, information that is acquired, based on this they say, he is rich in material wealth, he is rich in people following, you know, 1 million followers, 10 million followers in Instagram, all those kind of following. And then, wealth of information. Whereas when it comes to knowledge or wisdom, it is dissolving. It is microcosm merging in the macrocosm and realizing the essence of both the microcosm and the macrocosm, which is the ultimate declaration of the Upanishads. The Upanishads declare Brahma Satyam Jagat Mithya Jivo Brahmaiva Napara. Brahman is Satyam, real. Jagat, world, is unreal, Mithya. Jiva essentially is Brahman. Jiva Brahmaiva Napara. Nothing else other than Brahman. This is the declaration of the Upanishadic masters. So that should be gained. So in the end, Upanishad, like when you do math, when you are given a problem, you solve. How do you solve? to finally, first initially you say, let the answer be X. Then finally, X is equal to so and so. You know, you prove, you solve it. So similarly, in the Upanishad, finally, when you realize the self, you solve it within. How? This individual is equal to indivisible truth. Due to my mind and senses, I am seeing myself as individual. But when I go beyond the mind and senses, I understand that I am indivisible. Indivisible reality truth. So there is, strictly speaking, there is nothing dividing between you and me. What is dividing between you and me is my mind, your mind. Somebody got together and said, this is India's border, that is Pakistan, this is India, this is China. And then they keep fighting. They come in a little bit, we go this side, they go that side. It's like children playing game, you know. We keep playing. And then we teach the same game to our children before we die. Whatever happens, you fellows also continue playing this game and they also play. And their children, they teach and they continue. You know, they put up, there was a time when Germany was split into two, West Germany and East Germany. And each one were aligning with different superpowers. And then they were going through all sorts of politics. One day they broke the whole wall. Now it's only one Germany, united. It's all in the mind. So, that is the final equation. I is equal to individual today. But finally you will realize that I is equal to indivisible reality. That is that. Titiksha, Shraddha. With Shraddha you come to that state. And then finally, Samadhana. The mind has to be quiet, peaceful, to be able to pursue the knowledge. So this 6 plus the 3, Viveka, Vairagya, Satsampati, which is 6, and Mumukshatva, total 9 qualities. All this put together prepare you to gain the knowledge of the Upanishad. And when you have these qualifications, the ego dissolves, the divinity shines through you. This is what we discussed last week as a introduction to Upanishad. So Upanishad is nothing but Brahma Vidya. And Brahma Vidya, only qualified students should listen and only they will benefit. Others will not benefit. Sometimes they misunderstand and they terribly destroy themselves and destroy the world also. So like every Upanishad, Kena Upanishad also has an invocation. Kena Upanishad. Kena means by whom. The Shishya asks the question and the Guru answers. So Upanishad is also in a Q&A format, like Bhagavad Gita. We always say knowledge is never given, it is taken. You got to draw out. The very word education means that. To eke out. To draw out. So, it's given in a Q&A format. Kena means by whom. So in the very question, when he asks, we will talk about it in the first verse when we get there. When the student is asking the question itself, we understand the level of the student. Now, in this particular class, we have not studied the Vedanta Treatise book by Swamiji. Vedanta Treatise book is written by Swamiji in 3 parts. Part A, Part B, Part C. Part A is called Introduction to Vedanta. Part B is called Practical Vedanta. And Part C is called as Essence of Vedanta. Now this Part C is actually Upanishad. Even in Part C, the first chapter is not that much Upanishad, but slowly the Upanishad knowledge is given there. Part A and Part B is preparation. And here when the student asks a question in the first mantra, we will see that this guy is someone who has done all the homework, Part A and Part B he knows. That very question tells the level of the student. So by whom means he is going directly asking about the self. Not asking about anything else. He is not interested in Bhagavad Gita to become successful. Bhagavad Gita to bring in harmony in married life. Bhagavad Gita to bring up children. Nothing of the sort. All this is he understood. He wants only to know about Brahman. So by whom directly he goes to that source. So Kena Upanishad. Kena plus Upanishad according to Sandhi rule becomes Keno Upanishad. So by whom? You can say by whom Upanishad. So this Upanishad is talking about that self inquired by the Shishya. The Guru gives the answer. And traditionally the Upanishads, when they give the answer, they first give the answer in a cryptic way and then they little bit elaborate. So the students who are extremely qualified, from the cryptic answer itself, they get the message, they reflect and realize and go away. Then those students who need little more explanations, it's, all that is catered to by the Guru in the next few verses. That's how it proceeds the Upanishad. So to come and learn the Upanishad or any study for that matter is only beneficial to the extent one is humble. See, I've given this example before to you. Rainwater falls on both the mountain top and the valley. But it's only getting collected in the valley. Rainwater only, wets the mountain top. But the water gets collected only in the valley. Because the mountain has swelled, whereas the valley has dug itself deep, humbled. So in the humble valley, the water gets collected. In the egoistic mountain top, the water doesn't get collected. So humility is extremely important. Preparation is everything. Remember this. In psychology also, in communication, 90 to 99% is psychology and communication. 1% is only message. So you got to prepare. Like you got to prepare the soil before you sow the seed. So we need the invocation, which is chanted by both the Guru and the Shishya. It's a prayer. Now, prayer we understand in the worldly term as a begging, as something begging, begging for something. Here it is not begging. It is almost like commanding. Commanding doesn't mean egoistic, but it's like, I am ready now. So, I at the same time understand that I am a small circle. Small circle is part of the big circle. Big circle is not part of the small circle. Small circle is part of the big circle. So, whatever effort I could have done, I am still a small circle. Without the grace of the Lord, without the grace of the Guru, it's not possible to gain this knowledge. If in this lifetime we all have got an opportunity to study the scriptures and have interest to do that, itself means some kind of punya we have done. Sometimes when we look at ourselves in the mirror, we wonder whether we have really done some punya or not. But we can be rest assured that the fact that we've been studying this for a few years now, certainly we have done some kind of punya and we have attracted some grace of the Guru's, Guru Parampara and the Lord. Otherwise not possible. So, effort plus anugraha. There is a seen portion and there is an unseen portion. The seen portion now is the video that you are seeing, my video. I'm talking and you're seeing my video. The unseen is the software, the Wi-Fi, the satellite connection. There are so many unseen. Seen is actually very, very small portion. Even in computer software, they have front end and back end. Back end is huge. What we see on the screen is only front end. The back end we don't see. Similarly, our effort, the individual small circle's effort is definitely needed, but it's just a small dot. And the individual has to recognize the unknown factors, the unseen factors, what you call as deva. So they say deva anupulam. You need that. So, this prayer before getting on to any study, whatever scriptures, before you do anything, you need prayer. Prayer doesn't mean, okay, now I've told, Bhagavan, that please, let me have a conducive environment and gain the knowledge. So now Bhagavan will give me the conducive environment and I'll gain the knowledge. No, my effort is not needed. That is not the case. Of course, my effort is needed. But recognizing, even though I recognize that my effort is needed, I simultaneously recognize the fact that my efforts are also what? Finite. I need the grace of the Lord, grace of the Guru. So, the students and the teacher, together, they pray to the Bhagavan. The ultimate. Therein they are tuning up their minds and intellects with that frequency so that the knowledge communication becomes easy and becomes fruitful. That is what prayer is. Invoking the right atmosphere, invoking the right spirit. So it's not that I'm sitting here to just get some information. When I came in, I come in as an individual. But when I get out, I want to get out as indivisible. That's the wish of the Upanishadic students. Basically, the Upanishadic students wants to merge in the total. They want to dissolve. So the Upanishadic student is not asserting the ego. The Upanishadic student is ready to die, dissolve. The absolute death of ego. He is ready for that death. We are afraid of death. The Upanishadic student is getting ready for that ultimate death. So that kind of readiness the Upanishadic student shows, and with that resolve, he is sitting in front of the Guru, and together they both chant their prayer, which is called the invocation, to tune up. Like, you know, in the radio stations are broadcasting their channels, whatever their programs are, in a particular frequency. Your transistor, your radio, should be tuned up to that particular frequency. Then you will get that. If not, you won't get that. So we are not tuned. Without tuning up, if you suddenly come and sit in the Upanishadic class, you will not be able to absorb. So, it's preparing the subtle equipments in us, the mind, intellect, and even the body, to be able to focus and gain the knowledge and dissolve in that and realize the indivisible truth. That is called invocation. So it's not beggary. We understand the power of thoughts. So with the power of thoughts, they communicate for a better environment, externally and internally, so that they get the full benefit. That's the idea. That is the invocation. So Keno Upanishad has two invocations. The first invocation is what we chant before every class. Om Sahana Vavatu. And then the other one is another interesting invocation which talks about keeping our body, mind, intellect, everything in good condition to be able to gain the knowledge. So Upanishad is not life negative. Upanishads are life positive. A lot of people think Upanishad will take us away from life. There is a mantra here in the second chapter of Keno Upanishad. You call it second chapter or part two, whatever you want to call it. In that fifth verse, beautiful verse, where he says, only a person who's gained the knowledge of the Upanishads knows how to live the life. Everybody else is wasting their time. So, Upanishads, Vedanta is life positive, not life negative. In fact, we are thinking we are living. We are merely existing. Swami Ram Tirtha lived only 32 years, but he lived fully. We all have lived more than Ram Tirtha. But it's only just quantity. There is no quality in our lives. So therefore, invoking the right spirit within and without is the invocation. So the mind and intellect needs to be tuned in, you know. So you are coming to this class, maybe from your business or maybe from your other work. So when you come in straight away, you don't get tuned into this class. You get tuned in slowly. So invocation prepares the student, tunes up, and then they are ready to gain the knowledge. It's basically to ward off the obstacles. Some kind of obstacles will come. It's very interesting. The day you want to do upavas, you'll feel terrible hunger. The day you want to do something, that is when you will start facing all those challenges. So that's how life is. So when you're preparing yourself to go to that ultimate truth, there will be obstacles from external and internal. So the praying to that unknown divinity, land of divinity, we are surrendering to you. You please take care of those obstacles and also give us the strength to deal with those obstacles so that we don't give up gaining this knowledge. It's not easy. See, to start is easy. To start the studies are easy. But to travel along with it and bring about a transformation requires a lot of strength. Lot of strength. So that's the strength for which they are all praying. The guru also prays with the students, not because guru needs the strength. The guru is joining with the students and praying for them also. So it's the invocation which is chanted by both the guru and Shishya. So let us first see the first invocation. Sahana bhavatu, sahanau bhunaktu, sahaviryam karavavahai, tejasvinavaditamastu, mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. anything auspicious is started with the chanting of Om. I don't know if you remember, in the 17th chapter, we discussed this in the Bhagavad Gita. In the Bhagavad Gita, Sri Krishna talks about it. Om Tat Sat is a designation of Brahman. And anything auspicious, in the beginning and in the end, this is chanted. Every chapter end of in the Bhagavad Gita, if you remember, Om Tat Sat Iti Srimad Bhagavad Gita Upanishatsu Brahma Vidyayam Yoga Shastre. You say that, no? So, Om. Om is chanted by the Guru and the Shishya in the beginning, because first it has to be established for what we are sitting here. Why we have come together? Unnecessarily during this corona time. You know, why are we coming together? What is the reason for this communion? Through this Wi-Fi and all that. What is the purpose? Om. Om is a designation of Brahman. It's a complete, it's like, you know, when you go to meet someone, you give your visiting card. I'm Lakshmi Narayan, Vedanta teacher. And you're giving that visiting card. So, Om is the Brahman's visiting card. You can say so. Om is the designation of Brahman. It's a complete designation of Brahman, you can say. Om is not a word. It's a sound. And Om is a complete sound. It encompasses the complete range of sound. It is actually a combination of three sounds. When you say your mouth is fully open, the sound is coming from its base. The origin of the sound, where it starts, from there you say and then when you say, the mouth is half closed. It's at the middle. And when you say the lips are closed. The sound range ends there. So, A-U-M covers the entire range of sound. And when you say, the mouth is fully open. So, therefore we say, firstly, sound is a manifestation of silence. There is silence even when there is sound. But if you go to the dictionary will define silence as absence of sound. To recognize the silence, there should be no sound. But silence is there in sound also. Now when I am talking now, my guru is there. But he is silently there. Because I am only teaching what my guru taught, of course, in my own original way. The presentation is original. Script writing is original. Our storytelling is original. The script is all Guru Parampara. It traced back to the Bhagwan. The ultimate script writer is Bhagwan only. We are all storytellers. You know, screenplay writers. Real story belongs to Bhagwan. So, the Guru Parampara is silently present. Loudly, I am present. That's all. So, when there is sound, there is silence. But when the sound dissolves, you recognize the silence. So, sound is a manifestation of silence. And when you say, you keep your mouth fully opened. So the fully manifested state of consciousness is the waking state. In waking state of consciousness, the pure consciousness is manifested through the causal body, subtle body and gross body. We compare the waking state to the tree. The dream state is compared to the sapling. Deep sleep state is compared to the seed. Tree is the fully grown state. So similarly, the waking state is the complete manifestation of the consciousness. Hence it's called as waking state of consciousness. So you say, the entire mouth is open, you know, the full manifestation. So we say, represents the waking state. Then when you say, ooh, the sound is not fully open. Your mouth is not fully open. It's not a full range of sound. So that is taken to represent the dream state. Dream state is when the pure consciousness manifests through the causal body and subtle body. There is no gross body there. So it's compared to sapling. It's not a fully manifested state. So when you say, ooh, it's not fully open, the mouth. So therefore we say, who represents the dream state? Then when you say, what is happening there? The mouth is not open at all. Just a feeble sound you hear. This is the deep sleep state. In deep sleep state, the pure consciousness manifests through the causal body or the vasana. So, represents deep sleep state. Waking state, dream state, deep sleep state. In all these three states, the consciousness pervades. Consciousness pervades the waking state, dream state and deep sleep state. And when you chant Om, when you finish chanting Om, it is followed by silence. So you call it as Matra and Amatra. So when you say Om, it is not just A-O-M. A lot of people just say A-O-M is Om. No. A-O-M and the silence put together is Om. So A-O-M represents the waking, dream and deep sleep states of consciousness. And the silence that follows represents the pure consciousness. So that pure consciousness, silence, manifests through the complete range of sound, the waking, dream and deep sleep states. That pure consciousness, which is beyond the three states, which is pervading the three states and beyond, which means what? Which is immanent and transcendent. This is the same thing which is said in Tamil language as Kadavul. Kadavul. Ul means within. Kada means beyond. Kadandum irupavar, ulleyum irupavar desa. Ul means within, immanent. And Kada means beyond, transcendent. So God, in English we just say God. In Tamil we say Kadavul. In the Upanishad, very clearly they say, Taddure, Tadvantike, Tadantarasya, Sarvasya. So, all this is what? That pure consciousness is both immanent and transcendent. That pure consciousness which is immanent and transcendent is brought about in the designated sound Om. And to realize that is a purpose for which the teacher and the students have come together. Not for having tamasha. Once in a week we'll all meet together and then, you know, have some gapshap, little bit here and there, talk about Brahman also. No. Om. First establish. the purpose for which we have come together. And to that Brahman, which is both immanent and transcendence, which we want to realize, we pray. We need your support. In the Bhagavad Gita, beautifully Sri Krishna says, Mama Maya Duratyaya, very difficult to cross this Maya. Without my grace is it. So, without the grace of the higher, the lower cannot really do much. You can prepare the room, prepare the body, and then lie on the bed. That much you can do. But when you exactly fall off to sleep is not in your hands. That's not in your hands. Similarly, you can do everything, all preparations, sab kuch karenge. Then finally, you need the grace of the Lord. So, Om. We invoke that. That is the purpose and reason for which we have come together. Om. And we pray to that Om to be with us, supporting us, so that we can merge with it. It's not possible. Infinite has to come down to us, our level. We cannot go and merge with the total. So therefore, we say Om. And then the Upanishad starts into the prayer. First it says Om. Then it says Sahanau Avatu. May us both be protected. Who knows? I might be alive when I am starting the Upanishad. In between, now COVID situation is going on. COVID situation is going on. Who knows? After some time we may fall off, fall sick. Few classes we might miss. We don't even know whether the COVID will win or we will win. So may we both be protected from that level also, from the relative level also. We require protection because of the old habit. Easily the mind slips, isn't it? Just 1 week later when we meet, by the time we have already got corroded. If we imagine ourselves to be the iron rod, in 1 week's exposure in the samsaric world, we become corroded. So we need that protection. Because the samsara is too powerful. Maya Shakti is too powerful. It's not easy. Just one perception, one thought. You know, like that poem Pineapple and the Bee says, beside our foolish heart in flames, we long for pineapples in flames. Just a small thought or a sound or a perception is enough to be demoralized. We leave all everything and get back to our old ways of living. So that protection, they are saying, may us both be protected. That's what the guru and the sishya. Guru doesn't require any protection. Guru is identifying with the student and doing this. May he protect us both. Sahana vavatu. Sahanau avatu. That means may he protect us both. Then sahanau bhunattu. Now we are plunging into the study, the efforts. This has to be enjoyable. Otherwise, you are, when is this fellow going to complete this class? You know, unnecessarily I signed in and I got stuck here. When is he going to complete? It should be enjoyable. Now see, whenever we talk about enjoyment, the problem is, the enjoyment is happening in the mind level. In the Tattva Bodha, beautifully he talks about it. This physical body, which is called a gross body, and the mind an intellect, which is a subtle body. When he talks about the two, he beautifully says, gross body is bhoga ayatanam. Bhoga ayatanam means counter of experience. Counter of enjoyment or experience. Enjoyment in philosophical terms means both joy and sorrow. To be able to go through joy and sorrow, you need this gross body, counter. It's like hardware. For the software to function and work, you need a hardware. So it's, you know, bhoga ayatana. When it comes to the subtle body, it is the instrument. The real joy and sorrow is felt in the mind. Now the studying the Upanishads, when you study with the Guru, some of the things that you study goes beyond, you know, difficult to understand. It need not necessarily be entertaining. So may it be enjoyable. May my ego and mind not come in between. Protect me from those obstacles. So that I can enjoy. See, only when you enjoy can you really go into the depth of it. So please help us to make this study enjoyable so that we can sustain the effort for long. Not easy. You know. So may we both enjoy. May you causes both enjoy. May he causes to enjoy. Let the mind be dwelling in the cryptic words of the scripture, Vedas, the Upanishad. Let it find joy in this itself, so that it doesn't go extrovertedly to find joy in the world. May he protect us both. May he cause us to enjoy. So, sahanau avatu, sahanau bhunaktu, saha viryam karavavahai. Saha viryam karavavahai means may we strive together. May we strive together means a guru talks in the class and then you go and sleep, enjoy after the class is over. Next week you come again, guru talks. No. That's not the case. That should not be the case. The Shishya also needs to strive and make the knowledge his or her own. So the effort should be put in by both the Guru and the Shishya. In fact, to the extent the Shishya puts in the effort, to that extent the Shishya can absorb the knowledge. Guru is saying, same teacher taught us all the maths. One fellow straight away understands, scores 100 out of 100. One fellow scores 75, one fellow fails. Teacher is same. So it depends on our sadhana, our effort, striving. Upanishads want to emphasize that aspect of striving. So may we both strive together. It has to be both the Guru and Shishya, not only Guru. I come to Guru, Guru's responsibility, it's not my risk. No, not like that. May we strive together. So, saha viryam karavavahai. Tejasvina, Tejasvi, Tejas means brilliance. So, he says, Tejasvina, Tejasvi now means, we should become brilliant through this study. Tejasvinau adhitam astu. Tejasvinau adhitam astu. Means may our study become brilliant. Study become brilliant is not the external intelligence that he's talking about. See, the real brilliance is when we realize the self. tejas, when tamas and rajas are destroyed, sattva shines through the senses, the clarity. That brilliance where the self is revealing itself. So he is saying that, he is not saying that I get that intelligence so that I can conduct weekly classes on Upanishads and make a living out of it. No, he is not talking about that. May our study become brilliant. Brilliant means let the fire burn the wood completely. See, the beauty is the wood which is the fuel. Within the wood itself, there is fire. So when you churn the wood, in the friction, the fire comes from within. The fire that comes from the wood burns the wood. Wood is the fuel also, and within the wood only fire is also there. So when we study the scriptures with the guru churns us. That's what the guru does. The churning happens. Then the awareness from within comes. That awareness from within burns the vasanas. And when all the fuel vasanas are burned, just pure fire is there. That's the brilliance, the pure consciousness that he's talking about. May our study become brilliant. Tejas we know, aditamastu. Then he says, ma vidvishavahai. May we not dispute with each other. Let the study, the interaction not become disputatious. See, guru is talking from his level or her level, which is a condition, unconditioned level. We are at the level of condition. And from this level, you know, it's like that. Six blind men of Hindustan who went to see the elephant. Firstly, the fellows are blind. None of them have eyes. And they want to see the elephant, which is huge. And one fellow touched the tail, one fellow touched the trunk, one fellow touched the ears, one fellow touched the side of the elephant, one fellow touched the feet. Like that, each one touched one part. And then each one vehemently speaks. And the words they use, very interesting in that poem, Six Blind Men of Hindustan. Those fellows, they say, even the blindest can say, deny the fact who can. Those are the words they use. The fellows are blind. They are only touching one part of the elephant. The fellow who touches the elephant's ears, he says, elephant is very like a fan. One fellow who touches the side of the elephant, he says, elephant is like a wall. Elephant is like a spear. Elephant is like a tree. You know, all that. And deny the fact who can. Even the blindest can say. This is how they talk. So, basically what is happening is, they are not realizing the fact that they are blind. And they have gone to see what an elephant looks like. Similarly, Brahman, Brihat Tamatva Brahma, which means big, huge, infinite, complete, paripurna. That infinite you are trying to gain using the intellect which is finite. So from our conditioned state, we may start getting into argument with the guru. What are you talking? Well, there's a very nice story Swami Ramtirtha gives. He says, there are two fellows sitting in Himalayas arguing as to the source of the river Ganges. The Ganges has been flowing eternally, perennially. So therefore, they thought, one fellow said, there is a giant sitting on the top of the mountain and going on sweating. And his sweat is flowing as river. One fellow was saying this. Another fellow said, "Arey, yaar, it can be sweat. That fellow is making water. The giant is sitting on top of the river and making water, and that is flowing down as river." This is the argument. Somebody who just went to Gangotri and coming down, he saw these two fellows arguing and he heard the argument. He said, "Are you guys arguing about the source of the river Ganges? They said, yes. He said, I am just coming from that. If you guys are serious, wanting to really know the source, then come with me. I'll take you shoulder to shoulder. He's the guru. They said, yes, we are interested. So he took them shoulder to shoulder. And when he took them to the Gangotri, that place where Ganga originates, water is coming from rocks. So, if he had said in the beginning itself, water is coming from rock, there is no giant sitting there and making water or, sweating, they are going to argue with him. So, what are you talking? Rock se kaisa pani aayega? They will argue. But when they saw it, they know. Similarly, the words of the scripture and the master is coming from the unconditioned level. We don't understand it. When you try to see it from your conditioned sense level, mind level. So there may be a lot of arguments. But he says, may we not become disputatious. Let's get that vision of the guru. Let's merge with the totality. That's the prayer. Because to have, for this to happen, in between some kind of disturbance may come, we don't know. Oh God, there should be no disturbance. By the grace of the God, we started Bhagavad Gita and we went through the scripture. Then we studied Bhajagovindam, we went through that. Now we have started Keno Upanishad. Hopefully by the grace of the Lord, we'll sail through that also. So, this is how they are praying. And then again they say, Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. This invocation is also called as Shanti Path. Shanti Path, like I said, the obstacles at the external level and the obstacle at the environment level and the obstacle at the inner personality level has to be dealt with. As much as possible, when I'm sitting down to study, I should not have any obstacles, isn't it? To deal with it before itself. Like we say, anybody wants to come and study in the ashram, we say, Are yaar, if you have any loans, you have any other samsar, try to finish that and come. Otherwise, something is left unattended, your mind will only go there. Might as well finish it so that you can fully be available. So, first Shanti is an elongated chant. Om Shanti. These three Shanti are to ward off the three kinds of obstacles called as Adidaivatam, Adibhautikam and Adhyatmikam. Adidaivakam means the disturbances like thunder, lightning, etc. over which we have no control. So Adidaivatam, Adidaivakam. Adidaivakam refers to the cosmic disturbance. Let there be, you remember the Upanishadic students were studying in the jungle, not in the comforts of their rooms like you and me sitting in AC nightly, And also, now it's become very convenient. We are having this, Zoom class. So we can, all of us switch off our video. And then, I'm just saying this, and I don't know what is going on at the background. Just saying this. And maybe ordering some samosas and some coffee, tea, dal dosa and all that and, listening. So, this is not the case with the Upanishadic students. They were risking their lives and gone to the Himalayas, sitting there. So they say that there be no cosmic disturbance, Adidaivata. And Adibhautikam, the environmental disturbance. Tiger prowling and, all these kind of disturbances should not be there at the external level. Please take care of it. Then the bigger challenge is that which comes from within, Adhyatmika. Just when you are sitting down to study, you feel like having a glass of water or going to the loo or wanting to give instruction to your people at home. And some kind of thoughts will come. So, adhyatmika. So, first one is cosmic. So, you say shanti. Second one is external, environmental. So, you say shanti. And the third one is adhyatmik. So, that is almost whispering shanti within yourself. So, the idea is our thoughts become things. But the thoughts to become things, we need to command those thoughts with full personality. So when the Shishya and the Guru together with full conviction, with the depth, they say, let there be peace, then there will be peace externally. In fact, what we are experiencing in the world today is according to our thoughts. It is just that the mixture of thoughts, so we don't know. If you can bring yourself to one thought, what the world you will experience will be that. So with that kind of understanding, the power of thoughts, the Guru and Shishya chant this invocation to invoke the right spirit to ward off the obstacles from outside, which is called the Shanti part, you know, to bring about the Shanti, to be able to realize the self within. So with this chant of Om Shanti Shanti Shanti, the prayer is concluded. This is the meaning of this prayer. Every Upanishad has its own invocation. This Upanishad has two. So we've seen one today. We will see the other one next week and probably we'll get on to the text next week or maybe next to next week. So let's conclude the class now. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadhaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Om Kayena Vacha Manasendriyairva Buddhyatmanava Prakriti Swabhavat Karomi Adhyat Sakalam Parasmai Narayanayeti Samarpayami. Hari Om, see you all next week. Hari Om.